I discovered that motivation is one of the most difficult things to measure, whether that's the measurement in other people, their motivations, or my own. Sometimes I think I know why I am doing what I'm doing, or why I prefer doing something in a certain way. But when I try to examine myself, I discover that actually I usually don't have just one pure motivation. Usually it's three or four mixed motivations. It's kind of hard for us to know ourselves. And if it's hard for us to know ourselves, it's even more difficult to know other people. But we try, and sometimes we misconstrue people's actions and attitudes. I think we often find ourselves asking, well, why did he do that anyway? Why did he say what he said? And why did he say it in the way he said it, and when he said it, and how he said it? Or why didn't he do or say something? We struggle, it seems to me, with the whole notion of motivation, our own and others. And the Apostle Paul understood that struggle, both for himself and for others, and he was careful. He was very careful, and that's really what these last several chapters in 2 Corinthians are all about. Paul was careful that in what he did and how he did it, he did not in any way want to cast a shadow over the message of the gospel. That's saying it negatively. He didn't want to cast a shadow, hurt in some way the message by what he did or how he did it. Saying it positively, Paul wanted to be sure that he enhanced the message of Christ in any and every way he could. By the way, that happens to be the application for our message. Usually the preacher saves the application for the end, and I started with it. That is our application. We, you and I, we should not want to do anything or say anything that would cast a shadow over the message of Christ. Turn people away. Cause people to distrust or think less of the gospel message or the Bible more generally. Or to say it positively, we should want to enhance the message of Scripture, and particularly the message of the gospel of Christ. We should want to enhance that in any and every way we can, and make sure that what we do and how we do it is flowing from a pure motivation. I remember years ago reading a book while I was a pastor, reading about pastoring and about preaching and all those things. And the gentleman had this expression. He said, we need to be filled with a disinterested zeal for the glory of Christ. I had never quite heard those words like that. A disinterested zeal, that means nothing in it for ourselves. Disinterested, not uninterested, but disinterested zeal for the glory of Christ. And you measure then all that you do and all that you say and all that you are by that zeal for the Lord's glory, wanting to magnify Him in a beautiful way so that when people think of you, they think of Christ. And when they think of you, they think of Christianity as something that is beautiful and something that is good, and the Bible as something that is reliable and true, rather than the reverse, casting a shadow on all of that by what we do and how we do it. I was thinking of this in a slightly different vein not too long ago. When I taught the young preachers how to preach, One of the things that I tried to emphasize to them, especially, was that they do not draw undue attention to themselves. And sometimes, if our motivations aren't quite right, that's exactly what we end up doing, drawing undue attention to ourselves. Now, in the whole matter of preaching and homiletics, it is true that when you step, as I just did a moment ago, when you step in front of a group of people, they see you. And for at least a couple moments, you actually have their attention. You can lose their attention by not doing it right, but for a few moments at least, you have their attention. And the goal, of course, then is to take that initial attention and turn it into a rapt interest in what the message is going to be. That's just a good introduction. That's the way things are supposed to happen. But I would caution those young men. Now, you need to be careful. Be careful lest you draw undue attention to yourself. And it's easy to do that. You can draw undue attention to yourself as a preacher just by the way you dress or by your vocabulary. Well, there's all kinds of ways, good and bad, to do that. Paul was careful not to draw undue attention to himself and to focus the audience's attention on the message rather than on the person delivering the message. Of course, when you have detractors, you have enemies who are looking to break people away from you, they are going to look for just about every and anything they can to drive that wedge between the preacher and the hearers. And that's why you have this whole book, and particularly these latter chapters. By the way, I should tell you that welcome to those of you who have returned to us. We're glad for that. And there, we do have some extra notes here. I don't know if they got passed out or you have them or you want them. But nevertheless, here's a couple if you need them. We're on the last several chapters. Tonight we're in chapter 11, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. And just thinking out loud about Paul and how he defended his motivations. You know, why, Paul, did you do this? Or why didn't you do that? So we're going to begin. I'm just going to jump right in now, chapter 11, and actually at verse 7. We came here last time, last Sunday night. But I think I can begin. I better begin at verse 5. I see the paragraph really gets going there. The Apostle Paul, writing, says this: "For I consider that I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles. Even though I am untrained in speech, yet I am not in knowledge. But we have been thoroughly manifested among you in all things. Did I commit sin in humbling myself that you might be exalted? Because I preached the gospel of Christ to you free of charge?" Now, Paul is going to talk here about not taking money from the Corinthians. He did not allow them to give him a love offering or a paycheck, a salary. He wanted to give them the gospel, quote unquote, at no charge. That's what this is really all about. For the life of me, I can't understand why his enemies, why his detractors would try to attack him about that. I'm sure they had some kind of a logical twist in there. I'm not sure if I understand it quite, but that's what was going on. Notice what he says then in verse 8. "I robbed other churches, taking wages from them to minister to you. And when I was present with you and in need, I was a burden to no one. For what I lacked, the brethren who came from Macedonia supplied. Remember those churches up north, northern Greece? They came down from Philippi, particularly Thessalonica, Berea, and they took care of me, even though I was right with you there in Corinth. They supplied. Further in verse 9, and in everything I kept myself from being burdensome to you, so I will keep myself. He is saying, not only did I do that in the past, that was my practice with you, but I haven't changed, and I'm still not going to accept funds from you personally. I'm not going to take a salary. I may get myself in trouble here, and I know I need to keep reading. But the true truth is that one of the stickiest wickets in ministry and church life is money. It really is. And we joke about it, and probably rightly so. You know, the preacher only works a couple hours a week and gets paid, you know, for the whole week, that kind of thing. And I think it's most cases it's just, it's like that. It's like that deacon son when I was a pastor years ago. And we were locking up the church. I think I might have told you this. When you get old, that happens. And as we were locking up the church and leaving one Sunday night, I overheard the deacon's son say to his dad, Dad, when is Pastor Warren going to get a real job? I laughed. I thought, that's cool. That's how people think. And it's easy to misconstrue people's motives. He's only in it for the money. It's really easy to give people that impression. See, we're talking here about motivations here. Why do you do this? Et cetera, et cetera. So Paul is saying, now look, I ministered to you back then. I'm still ministering to you. No money. No money. Sorry. Free of charge. Other people are supporting me. Oh, I better go back to reading here. Verse 10. As the truth of Christ is in me, no one shall stop me from this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Paul was adamant here, wasn't he? He was saying, you don't support me, and I'm not taking any money from you, period. And they didn't like that. Why? Verse 11. Because I do not love you? God knows. That is, God knows how much I love you. And my refusal to take money from you does not have anything to do with my loving you. But what I do, verse 12, but what I do, I will also continue to do. Why? You know, here's the motivation now. That I may cut off the opportunity from those who desire an opportunity to be regarded just as we are in the things of which they boast. My understanding of that is I am not going to take any support from you so that I can cut off anybody's opportunity to criticize me taking money. I'm in it for the money. The only reason he's doing it is for the paycheck, the almighty dollar. And Paul says, I'm going to cut off that criticism because I'm not taking any money. Period. And we're going to see this again in chapter 12 next time, not tonight. But he'll return to this, which tells me that he felt very strongly about it. And by the way, in case I don't want to give you a wrong impression here, there really isn't anything wrong with pastors and teachers being supported financially by the congregation. Paul is not saying that. As a matter of fact, he here has said, you know, I receive money from other churches. I robbed other churches in order to minister to you. So there's nothing wrong in principle here that a pastor should be supported financially. That's not in view here. what is in view, that Paul did not want his enemies to have a leg to stand on, to discredit him, and thus to discredit his message. Enough said. He goes on, verse 13, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ." No wonder Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. "Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works." And I take a breath. I go, wow, that Paul is saying that these folks who were so critical of him, these enemies, they're really aligned with Satan. I take it they're not believers. These are unsaved religious teachers. He said, don't be shocked, because Satan transforms himself into light, and so are they. But they're not true believers, and they are truly my enemies. He did say that. I do want to back up to verse 5 just for a moment, because there's something there that just bothers me, so I might as well say it. Chapter 11, verse 5, he says, "For I consider that I am not at all inferior to the most eminent apostles. Even though I am untrained in speech, yet I am not in knowledge. But we have been thoroughly manifested among you in all things." How do I say this? Apparently, these detractors were saying that Paul was less than a true or legitimate apostle. They were attacking his credentials. He was substandard. This expression occurs two or three times. This very most eminent apostles. When you get to the book of Galatians, you have a similar, not the same, but a similar kind of a division among the apostles. And he talks about Peter, James, and John, who seemed to be pillars. They were the pillars. In my terminology, I would say they're the biggies. So you got the biggies and the littlies. You got those who are really apostles, and those who are apostles. I don't know where that came from. Perhaps because Paul was not one of the original 12. He was kind of a Johnny come lately, you remember. And perhaps some were using that history against him. See, he wasn't really one of the original dudes. Although Paul claimed, you know, "I am a full-blooded, full-fledged apostle, and I have seen the Lord." And if you read the book of Galatians, he interestingly says, "I went out into Arabia, and I had a kind of like private tutoring by the Lord himself for 3 years. Guess what the other apostles had? Private tutoring by the Lord himself for 3 years. Kind of an interesting parallel there. So Paul made sure that everybody understood he was a full-fledged, authorized apostle. And he goes on to say here, essentially, "And you Corinthians know it. You know all about me. You know all about my credentials, all about my apostolic authority. You know all that stuff. Don't somehow think of me less." Again, Paul wasn't using that selfishly. It could seem like it. But he understood that if his detractors could get the Corinthians to think less of him, then they could also get them to think less of his message and of the gospel. And that's a fine line motivational distinction. I found when I was a pastor and people criticized me, it was hard to discern my own motivation as to why I wanted to answer them or treat them in a certain way Was I really interested in them and in their well-being, or did I just want to get even? Of course, I always chose the right way. You know that. I'm just teasing. You're taking me a little too seriously. Okay, the latter part here of chapter 11 talks about suffering and boasting about his sufferings. I got to start at verse 16, I guess, and at least just read. I say again, let no one think of me a fool. If otherwise, at least receive me as a fool, that I may also boast a little. What I speak not according to the Lord, but as it were foolishly, in this confidence of boasting. Seeing that many boast according to the flesh, I also will boast. Paul is going to launch into quite a, not just in 11, but also into 12, talking about boasting. You get the impression that these detractors were people who were talking an awful lot about themselves. As I mentioned at the beginning, they were drawing undue attention to themselves. And Paul says, okay, you Corinthians are putting up with that. I'm going to boast too. Or at least I'm going to boast similarly. Verse 19, for you put up with fools gladly, since you yourselves are wise. For you put up with it if one brings you into bondage, if one devours you, if one takes from you, if one exalts himself, if one strikes you on the face. You know, you put up with these people who really mistreating you. To our shame, I say that we were too weak for that. But in whatever anyone is bold, I speak foolishly, I am bold also. Now, I just got to read this. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. And then he illustrates it. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often from the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. That is 39 stripes, 5 times. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. He's not done. Catch your breath. In journeys often, that's the one I liked when I was a state rep and traveling all over Ohio. In journeys often, I said, I can relate. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. This is not a pity party. And if you are prone to pity parties, as I am, read this every once in a while. I like pity parties myself. I show up at them rather regularly, and I try to get my wife to come, and she won't come. But Paul is not doing a pity party here. He is telling the truth. This is what actually I have been through for Christ. They say they're apostles. Hey! And then he's not done. Verse 28, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily? My deep concern for all the churches. Paul says, I'm not concerned about myself. I'm concerned for all the churches. Who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to stumble and I do not burn with indignation? If I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern not my strengths, not my accomplishments, not my training, not my abilities, nothing that would put me into undue prominence. No, he says, I'm not going to boast about myself at all. I'm going to boast in things which concern my infirmity, my weakness. The God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying, which is a way of saying, God knows my motives. I can tell you, you can't see my heart. You don't know completely, truly why I do what I do, but God does. And I affirm before you and Him, this is what makes me tick. And this message of the gospel is not about me so as to draw undue attention to me. I have gone through all this difficulty and suffering and trouble for Christ and the message of the gospel. And as far as Paul's concerned, that's all that counts. One of you said to me a few weeks back, in just a bit of a casual conversation, maybe it was while we were greeting one another, I forget exactly, she said, because she asked me if I had read a particular book about Paul, and I hadn't. And she said off the cuff, well, I can tell that you're a real fan of Paul. And that happens to be the truth. And I say that to you because I have a hard time in 2 Corinthians, believe it or not, I have a hard time thinking that there was a church and there were a group of enemies who were taking him to task and criticizing him and totally misconstruing what he did and how and why. But that's my naivete. Because I've been around the block a few times with 150 plus churches, and I know what happens in churches. Or what can happen in churches. Pastors aren't perfect. Pastors need, as I've indicated, pastors need to keep a tight rein on their motives. Not just on the message, as important as that is, but on the motivation, why am I doing this the way I'm doing this, etc. A pastor needs to be very careful about his inner life and motivation. He really does. And I know, since I've been there, you can misuse a pulpit. You can misuse a title. You can misuse ministry opportunities. You can do that unconsciously, and you can do it consciously to the point where you cast a shadow over whatever. So I know that that's true. But I also know that the vast majority of pastors in our churches are people who love the Lord and who want to enhance the message without getting in the way. And those pastors need your support. They need your friendship. They need your trust. They need your prayers and mine. And that's enough. Father, thank you for this time together. Thank you for this book and the pain that we read about and the agony of trying to maintain a healthy connectedness with people who don't trust and don't know. Lord, teach us in our personal interactions, whether in the church or out, whether publicly or privately, to so agonize, to maintain good connections with folks. And Lord, help us to be introspective, at least to the degree that we know why we do what we do, and that we can say with clarity and strength, that we only want to enhance your work and not call undue attention to ourselves. Help us, I pray, in Jesus' name.